Cain after the offering. Genesis 4, verse 5b. And Cain was very wroth, and his countenance fell. This and the few following clauses will give us a little grammatical trouble, but I hope we shall make our way out of the difficulty successfully. We have heard that Cain was disappointed in his hope. He had despised his brother in comparison with himself, and had judged that on account of the right of his primogeniture, he should hold the first place with God, as he had done with his parents. The judgment of God, however, was quite different from that of men. He showed that he approved Abel, but rejected Cain. The result was, therefore, that Cain was violently enraged against his brother, for he could not endure with any patience that he should be thus rejected and excommunicated, and deprived also at the same time of his rule and priesthood. Just in the same manner also, we see kings and princes to be utterly impatient of the judgment of the church. For they are not satisfied with being kings and princes, they want to be accounted also righteous and saints before God, and they will take to themselves the name of the church. Exactly like these, Cain was filled with indignation when he saw that the honor of righteousness and grace before God was taken from him. For what else was this than being cast out of the church and excommunicated? And his indignation at this dishonor was the greater in proportion to the measure in which he judged himself degraded beneath his brother. For his thoughts were these: My brother will assuredly aspire to the headship and rule, since he sees me thus despised and disregarded of God. And hence it is that Moses uses the adverb very wroth, by which form of expression he would signify that Cain was vehemently offended because he was ignominiously confounded in public before his whole family, whereas he had always wished to appear the first among them. This Cain-like wrath is just that rage which we see also in the Cain-like church of the Pope. For what is there which gives the Pope, the cardinals, the kings, and the princes greater offense than that I, a poor beggar, set the authority of God above the authority of them all, and that I condemn in the name of the Lord all those things which are worthy such condemnation? They themselves also acknowledge that there are many things which need rigid reformation, but that I, a poor obscure person, coming into public out of some obscure corner, should presume to do this, is a thing which they consider to be beyond all endurance. And therefore they put forth all their authority against me, and by the weight of that authority they attempt to crush us. And most certainly there is not in the whole world a wrath more cruel than that of this church of hypocrisy and blood. For in all political or civil rage there is some degree of humanity still left. No assassin is led to execution, however savage his nature may be, with pity for whom men are not in some measure touched. But when that false and bloodthirsting church falls upon a poor son of the true church, she is not satisfied with shedding his blood. She loads him also with her curses and execrations, and devotes him to every ignominy and insult, and even vents her rage upon his miserable, breathless corpse. Just like the Jews, who were not content with having nailed Christ to the cross, with the full purpose of not taking him down till he was dead, but even while he was breathing out the last breath of his soul, they gave him, in his thirst, vinegar to drink mingled with gall. Such fury as this is never found in political wrath. The wrath, therefore, and the Pharisaic fury of the false church is a fury in its very nature diabolical. This wrath began in Cain, and it continues in all Cainites to this very day. And we can most truly glory that we also have to endure with godly Abel just such wrath as this in our day. For who entertains a doubt that if our bishops and certain furious princes could do it, they would slaughter us all in one moment? Who doubts that, if, according to the prayers of the notorious Roman emperor, we all together had but one neck, they would, with the greatest delight, rush upon us sword in hand and cut off our head? Only look at the councils of these later years and their designs, and you will say that my testimony is true. That which Moses adds, and his countenance, appearances, look, whole aspect, fell, is a Hebrew expression, an expression which not only represents the deed done, or the fact, but also implies that the mind also was in such a state of commotion that it could not rest, and that although Cain could no further harm, yet his wrathful will to do so was manifested by his countenance. He did not lift up his fallen brow, nor speak in a friendly voice to his parents as before, and every answer he made them was rather a sullen murmur than a natural utterance. He was struck pale at the first sight of his brother after his offering, which God had accepted, and he showed by the threatening looks of his eyes that his mind was burning with the desire of revenge. Moses expresses all this when he says, "And his countenance fell," for he does not mean his countenance or visage only, nor merely one part of his countenance, but he intends all his appearances, his whole appearance, his every look, gesture, and motion, in the same manner as the apostle uses a Hebrew expression when he says concerning charity that it doth not behave itself unseemly, that is, doth not carry an unseemly countenance, doth not contract its brow, doth not look with anger or disdain, doth not wear a threatening aspect, but is of a free and open visage, expressing with its eyes kindness and affection. For the latter are becoming, but the former are unbecoming and indicative of vice within. This clause, therefore, "and his countenance fell," contains a particular description of the anger and hypocrisy of Cain. He could neither look at his brother Abel, nor hear his voice, nor speak to him, nor eat, nor drink with him in rest or quietude of mind. If anyone desires to witness an example of this Cain-like wrath, let him put himself in the presence of some papist who is seeking distinguished praise for doctrine or piety in his day and generation, and he will find that such an one is the subject of a rage against the truth, perfectly diabolical, to which fury, if you compare the anger of a judge, the latter will appear in comparison to be the greatest kindness, mercy, and open candor. For in the judge, anger is merely a duty. He is not angry with the person of the prisoner, but with his crime. But the Cainite wrath fires and distorts the eyes, scowls the brow, swells the cheeks with rage, and arms the hands. In a word, it is evident in every part of the body and in its every gesture, and that unceasingly, for it does not die away by time as political or domestic wrath does. Next follows the fatherly and most grave admonition of Adam, who would willingly have healed and saved his son if he could have done so. But this wrath knows no medicine or cure. Neither Cain nor any Cainite will hear either father or mother or God himself.